Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Tuesday night was a very interesting special election. It's a special election in the middle of August, so the question is, what does it mean for November? I'm not sure, but I do know that Ohio's 12th district has not had a Democratic representative since 1983. It's been 35 years, consistently Republican. It's actually the district of the current Ohio governor, John Kasich. You may remember him. He ran for president and did pretty well, I guess, by 2016 standards. The Republican, you would think, would walk away with it. Donald Trump won the district by 11 points. Mitt Romney won it by 10 points. Solid, solid Republican district. It is now, well, it's too close to call. All the votes have been counted, at least all the votes cast on Election Day. They're still going through absentees and provisionals. The Republican is ever so slightly ahead. The New York Times reports him less than one percentage point ahead with 1,564 votes. But they're still counting some provisionals. It could go either way. Even if the Republican does eke out a victory, it's still a pretty dramatic switch for this district. My question for this hour, and I have a really special guest I'll introduce you to in just a bit, but my question for this hour is Donald Trump helping or hurting the Republican Party? Given that this district, if this district is a bellwether or not, and frankly with all the news that we're going to talk about in the press, is there daylight or should there be daylight between the president and the Republican Party? To answer that question, I have a real die-in-the-wool Republican. Actually, a friend of mine. Yes, that's right. We can have friends across the aisle. I'll even show him on Facebook. For those of you on the Facebook, his name is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist. It's his job to get Republicans elected, and he's in Northern Virginia, so it's a particularly difficult job for him there. Mike Lane, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. And I think just for the record, we should let everybody know that not only have we been friends for 10 years or whatever, but you're also my elected delegate in the Virginia General Assembly.
I represent him, so I can't be too mean to him, guys. Sorry. But, Mike, I got to tell you, I've gone through today's Washington Post, and just story after story after story talks about things that normally, well, Republicans would get upset about. There's not just, Donald Trump not taking action against Vladimir Putin, having attacked us. There's tariffs, Chinese targets, $16 billion in U.S. goods. Republicans, and I think you, used to stand for free trade, so many tariffs that Trump wants to give $12 billion to farmers. That would be welfare. Again, kind of thing usually Republicans are opposed to. Meanwhile, just to add insult to injury, in addition to Donald Trump's campaign manager being on trial and his deputy campaign manager fingering him in a pretty brutal trial in our hometown of Alexandria, Virginia, we have the very first lawmaker to ever endorse Donald Trump, Chris Collins, New York congressman. Innocent until proven guilty, but let me tell you, if he's involved in this insider trading scheme, it looks really, really serious. And I guess the heart of my question, and it's all based on Ohio 12, but these other factors as well, is do you see a blue wave coming? Because I'm seeing a tsunami, but I'm biased. You and I talked on Virginia Election Day, and I was more optimistic for Democrats than you, but I admit I didn't see the blue wave coming. Now I see it coming. My question for you, do Republicans see it coming, and do they think it's caused by Donald Trump, and what are you doing about it?
Well, okay, let's go back to Virginia.
Okay.
We did meet on Election Day. We chatted a little bit about it. You were more optimistic for your side than I was. It turned out we both underestimated the size of the whole thing. And I think that, you know, using that as the launching pad, there really hasn't been a lot of change that's taken place in the electoral map that I've seen. So when you look forward to 2018 and you ask me, you know, is there a blue wave coming? You called it a tsunami from your perspective. The question is, how do you define wave?
We're taking the House of Representatives.
This feels eerily to me exactly like 2010. In fact,
you and I actually talked about 2010.
Right.
And you predicted a Republican wave, and I was nervous.
Right.
Are we in the reverse situation now?
Let me talk about the similarities. The similarities are really Obama and Trump. They're exactly alike in this case. When President Obama and President Trump are on the ballot, they're extraordinarily successful at motivating their peeps to get out and vote. And when they're not on the ballot, they're extraordinarily good at motivating their opposition to go out and vote. Donald Trump is not on the ballot this time. He's extraordinarily good at motivating his opposition to go to the polls. I think we've seen that time after time after time since he's been elected, starting with the special election in Atlanta down
there. Yeah, there's Alabama, Conor Lamb in Pennsylvania. I mean, there's example after example.
So getting back to your tsunami question.
Yeah.
So in 2010, the Republicans picked up 63 seats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that for a number of reasons that we can get into, but quite honestly, they're in the weeds. If you define a wave as taking control of the House,
I do.
That would be 23 seats.
You agree with me, the Democrats are going to take the House.
That would be 23 seats.
Right.
I think that we're going to be much closer to the historical average, which is
35.
Right now, between 31 and 33 in that area.
Okay. All right. I'll go for a little bit higher than that, but the heart of it is you and I both agree the Democrats are going to take the House.
There's still 90 days left.
Yes, there are.
Plenty can change, but I'm very glad the election is not being held today.
One of the things I always liked about you, Mike, is that even though you and I disagree on many policies, I think you fairly give me your prediction, which is separate from your wish. And I agree with you, Democrats could take the House. I'll give you between 50 and 60, rather than 30 and 40. But the main thing is who controls that gavel, and I think it's going to be Nancy Pelosi, not whoever, whatever Republican.
Well, it's up to you guys whether or not it's Nancy Pelosi or somebody else. But
Pelosi.
All right.
So now the Senate, I'll be the first to admit, is really, really hard this year, not because of Trump, not because of the wave, but because just there's actually there are more seats being defended by Democrats. But defending by the party out of power, then I looked it up since any time since the popular election of senators began 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard. I do think it's possible, though, and it would take a bit of a tsunami. I'll fully admit it's hard. If I have to give a prediction, I'll predict 50-50. I predict we gain one seat. But we might just gain two seats. And I think they're going to come from Tennessee, Nevada, and Arizona. We need two of the three, and we have to hold all our Democrats. I would say the most dangerous for us are Indiana and Missouri, with North Dakota being a close third. I'm not really worried about the other Democrats. I don't know what your views are.
I think you've outlined it fairly well. I would expand the board a little bit more than that. I would say
Florida?
Let me say worst case scenario for us. I think you guys could go up 1 to 2 seats in the Senate.
Yeah, two seats is critical because we take control.
I'm not talking about. I'm saying you could have a 52-48 majority.
Worst case scenario. The worst case is we win Arizona, Nevada, and Tennessee and hold all our incumbents.
And then
best case for us.
And best case for you. And then best case for us is we could go up 5. So
yeah, it's not gonna happen.
I don't think you're going to get 52 either. But
no,
I'm
not
just saying.
I think we will get 1 or 2, and 2, of course, is critical.
Okay,
I think worst case for us is 0. Is that it doesn't change.
And I would say if you force me to bet right now, I would bet net plus 2 for the R's.
Okay, if I had to bet, I'll bet net plus 1 for the Dems.
Okay,
and we'll see. We'll see where we go after this.
All right.
But my larger question, I mean, we can all play predictions and no one really knows until it happens. But my larger question for you is Donald Trump, does he help or hinder your party right now? If you're a Republican in a purple district, do you want him to come or not come? Because Troy Balderson, the Republican in Ohio 12, asked Trump to come. Kasich, who used to have the seat, thought it was a bad idea. Told Congressman Balderson, you know what, I really think that's a bad idea. Trump came in and they're in a squeaker in a district that y'all should win by 10 points. I don't know whether you think that was a factor or not, but in these, no one's talking about the ruby red districts because those aren't flippable. But when it comes to the 60 odd seats that Cook says are difficult for Republicans, do you bring Trump in?
Okay, so let me answer your first question first, which was, does Trump help or hurt the battle for the Congress?
Right.
The answer is yes.
I'm not talking about ruby red districts. I'm talking about the districts that can flip. I mean, if you tell me he helps, a district that's plus 50 Republican, it doesn't matter.
So I have a different viewpoint than John Kasich does, and perhaps different from you. I actually think the reason that the reason he won or is ahead right now during
the counting,
is because of Trump. I think he would have lost if Trump had not gone to that district.
So you now, think that Trump helps in swing districts?
Well,
this is a suburban district.
No. I think Trump drove an extra couple thousand people in turnout out there. That was the margin of difference for the Republican in Ohio 12. But if you don't have Donald Trump doing what Donald Trump does in the White House in the first place anyway, then the Republican wins that district by 8-10 points, as you pointed out.
Right. So
what I'm saying is, you know, Donald Trump creates the environment that we're in, but when you have a particularly close race like that, if you send the president out there, his opponents, his adversaries, the never Trumpers, the hate Trumpers,
will come out no matter what.
They're already there. So if Donald Trump goes out there in a really close race and motivates 5, 6, 7, 10,000 more people to come out and vote, that's a net plus for us because the anti-Trump people are already coming.
Okay, but let me ask you my basic question. So we'll put political prognostication aside and just talk about sort of where your heart is, where your brain is. We have a president who's sucking up to the Russian dictator. I don't think you dispute that, do you?
I don't think he's sucking up to that. I mean, he just threw more sanctions on yesterday, Mark.
Was it him or was his administration? I mean, yes, there are definitely people in the administration that don't like Russia. I'm not disputing that. But, I mean, here, experts, this is in the Washington Post. I'll turn my Facebook around.
Go ahead.
Show the headline. Experts say that Trump lacks urgency on Russian threat. It goes on to talk about the fact that while people in his administration, which I don't dispute, have problems with Russia, Trump, here you have Rand Paul delivering a secret message, and Rand Paul is one of those people who, like Donald Trump, says, America, Russia, they both do bad things. I know, look, Mike, you and I have known each other for 15 years now. You would never say, Russia's bad, America's bad, we both do bad things. You would never put them in the same category.
No. America's good, Russia is bad.
Right.
Putin is bad.
Right, we agree on that. But I'm not so sure about our president. I mean, he's the one, every time they talk about, Bill O'Reilly says, you know, Putin's a killer. And he's like, well, you know, we've killed people ourselves too. Kind of missing the point.
Well, we do. Let's go right into the efforts to influence our elections.
Okay.
I find them laughable. Look. Facebook just found allegedly another 100 accounts that were of Russian origin.
Yes, they did.
And they each had, you know, maybe 1,000 followers or something like that.
Washington Post today, hold on, it's one of these many articles here. It says that 40,000 people attended events scheduled by a Russian account.
Okay, nothing.
QAnon, it's the new conspiracy theory.
I don't even know who that idiot is.
I'm hoping he's punking the Trumpists, frankly.
All right.
I really don't know who he is, but it's more than that. And we're gonna have to take a break soon. The Russians, and I know this just from frankly working in the Virginia House and attending a cybersecurity seminar, the Russians have attempted to hack into every one of the 50 states' databases.
That's what concerns me.
And it should concern you. And although they haven't changed outcomes that we know of. We know that in at least 2 states, and the only one that's been public is Illinois, they've gotten in and they've changed voter databases. They've changed who's on the rolls so that it's kind of the same. It's not quite the same as stuffing the ballot box, but it's kind of the same because when Mr. Smith goes in to vote, his name's not on the voter rolls. Luckily, we have provisional ballots.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Mr. Smith may just go away and not vote. I mean, that is a way to change an election. We got to take a break, but we'll come back. 888-488-MARK, you want to join us? 888-488-6275, right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Republican strategist Mike Lane, talking about the upcoming midterms and the Trump effect. There's an article in the Washington Post, front page, in the best spot they have in the newspaper, GOP debates Trump effect. and whether Donald Trump is helping or hurting the party. So I thought I'd ask an actual GOPer, Mike Lane, who's my friend from a long time, even though we disagree on virtually everything. Actually, we agree on, frankly, more than people would suspect than we agree on. But I didn't want to cut you off before. You were talking about
Let me make my point quick, and then we can go. So, okay, I'm not worried about 10 or 100 or even 1,000, you know, phony Russian Facebook and Twitter accounts that, you know, have relatively few followers and combined get as many as 30 or 40,000 people to come out to different things. They're on both sides. They're trying to disrupt American politics. They're really not trying to elect anybody in particular. Those things don't bother me, and I hope we do the same thing to them. What does bother me is what you were talking about just before the break, and that is an attempt to hack into our election databases. By extension, you might say that they're not only trying to hack into the databases, but they're hacking into any part of the election system that they can, strictly for nefarious purposes. There's absolutely no reason other than just screwing with our stuff that they would do something like this. And so that scares the hell out of me. And I'm very glad to see that the president ordered his team to really, you know, crack down and be prepared for this by Election Day.
See, I don't see that, Mike. He did do the sanctions on Russia because of the chemical weapons attack against Great Britain, which I'm glad he did, where they killed those Russians in Great Britain by poison. That's what the economic sanctions were for. Congress actually put them out, you know, a year ago. The administration's following suit. I support that. Better late than never. But when it comes to actually protecting against cybersecurity, you know, the members of the administration that I trust, Chris Wray, FBI director, I went to law school with him. I think he's an honest man. I think he's an honorable man. He sees the threat. He talks about the threat. But the Washington Post, this is a headline, experts, Trump's team lacks urgency on Russian threat, interviewed 100 cybersecurity experts. 94 said we weren't doing hardly anything to fight this. And
There was a press conference just 3 or 4 days ago where the heads of all those things said, we've just finished our meeting with the president. He has ordered us to make this the priority and, you know, carry it out and make sure that our elections are safe come Election Day in 90 days or whatever the magic number is.
Yeah, that's not quite how I heard the press conference. I heard that those people really care, and I don't dispute any of them. Dan Coats, I think they're good people, which is why I think that we have a chance of them carrying it out. But, you know, Dan Coats said something to the effect of, I don't want to get the exact words, but something to the effect of, you know, we're going to try to make sure that our elections are fair, which just didn't, you know, we're going to try to make sure our elections are fair. That it just
you didn't suffer
it wasn't
from,
like, we're going to guarantee that we never have a corrupted election. I mean, you know,
you're not suffering from overconfidence, is what you're
saying. I'm not suffering from overconfidence. We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, though, I want to get to the question of the Republican brand.
Okay.
Because whether it's Russia or free trade or corporate welfare, which I remember you really complaining about with Barack Obama,
yeah.
You know, the farmer stuff, the even the separation of children, which many Republicans, obviously we Democrats hate it, but many Republicans didn't like that policy, didn't think it was fair. Whether your brand is being hurt, is the Republican Party as a brand suffering because Donald Trump is acting, shall we say, not very Republican in your view? So that's my question when we come back. Folks, if you want to join in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be right back.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Republican strategist Mike Lane. The Washington Post has an article today that says GOP debates Trump effect. And the question is whether or not... That's the wrong thing to show the picture. There we go. There it is. Whether or not elections like the 12th District of Ohio that just occurred Tuesday, and more importantly, what both Mike and I agree will be a blue wave. We disagree on how it'll be a wave or a tsunami. Both of us agree that the Democrats are going to take over the House. But whether or not this blue wave is caused by Trump, accelerated by Trump, maybe Mike's going to say it's just your typical midterm where the party out of power always does better. But I would suggest that Donald Trump is very different from, oh, let's say Marco Rubio, who I know Mike has told me he voted for and supported.
In the Virginia primary.
In the Virginia primary. But different from Mitt Romney, different from John McCain. I can give you a whole host of Republican standard bearers, different from George W. Bush, Bob Dole. I mean, going back as far as I can go, Republicans used to support free trade. They used to oppose corporate welfare. They used to oppose really big debt. They used to oppose Russia. I seem to recall a certain Republican president that said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." I think y'all like him, Ronald something.
Yeah, Ronnie.
I think he's spinning in his grave right now. How has your brand changed or suffered? Or how does someone who I know supports these, I think you support free trade, I think you're anti-Russia, I think you're against big debt, I don't think you support corporate welfare. You and I have talked for 15 years. How do you deal with your own beliefs and what I think used to be Republican brand beliefs and this guy who's the president?
All right, let's start with the tariffs.
Okay.
You're right. I'm a free trader guy, and what Donald Trump has decided is that we don't have free trade. We don't have enough free trade. And I don't believe he is using the tariffs as a policy as much as he is using it as a weapon or a tactic to convince our trading partners to have more fair trade and more free trade with us. Now, if he's right and wins this in a relatively short period of time, then of course all the tariffs go away, very little harm done, and the market opportunities for all of our goods and services expand dramatically across the board. On the other hand, if it turns out that he is not successful in using these weapons, the question is, what do we do now? Remember that scene from Robert Redford's The Candidate, you know, when they got elected? Uh-oh, what do we do now? You know, once you get into something, you got to carry it all the way through. And if the
If Obama had done this, would you have supported it, Mike?
If the Europeans and the Canadians don't back down and don't give us what we're looking for, then we're in trouble. And it turns out that a tactic is now a policy, which is a bad policy.
So, first of all, would you have supported this if Obama had done it?
Depending on how he explained it, probably not. Okay. But you know, he may have.
Well, let's go country by country.
I mean, I'll give him a chance to convince me, but probably not.
Let's go country by country. Europe and Canada aren't backing down one bit.
Europe blinked a little.
No, not really. All they promised to do is what they'd already promised to do before. All they did was reaffirm prior trade stances that Donald Trump declared victory. It's kind of like when North Korea says, "Oh, I'm going to agree with what we've always agreed on for the last 10 years," and Donald Trump declares victory, and then they go about with their testing.
With a promise to go back to the negotiating table and get as close to a, you know, no trade barriers at all as they can.
I think Trump raises a big fuss. I think this is true whether it's Korea or Russia or Europe or China or Canada. Donald Trump raises a big fuss, makes a big deal out of it. Nobody backs down, and then he claims victory. That's what I see as a pattern again and again and again in all these countries. China is slapping $16 billion in U.S. goods.
I'm okay with that. I think China's in a different category.
Well, China, you know, for one thing, China is not our friend. I mean, they are our competitor. You know, when you call Canada a national security threat, I think you have a screw loose. And of course, I guess I'm saying the president has a screw loose.
It was a legal peg on which to hang a tariff. That was all.
Do you support dishonest legal pegs? I know you don't think Canada is a national security threat.
No. But here's the thing, Mark. You know, it is for a long time generally believed that you ought to have your own industrial means of production to finance your national security needs. Now, we have certain neighbors and allies.
Are we really worried about Canada turning against us? I mean, I think the War of 1812 is over. I think we're past it now. It's been a couple hundred years. It's not too soon.
Suppose Canada is attacked by a nuclear weapon and no longer has the capabilities of doing it.
We are under an alliance called NATO where we
defend
Canada. I hope you're not suggesting we wouldn't respond if Canada were attacked.
No, but now we can't rely on their steel is my point, because they've been wiped out. And so, you know,
how is that different from them hitting Pennsylvania and knocking out our steel plants? To me, an attack on Canada is an attack on the United States.
That's what NATO's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the same difference. I mean, to me, Canada's assets are our assets in an emergency, and I have zero doubt that Canada would be with us, as they've been with us consistently
for a century. I'm not talking about them changing their mind or changing their agreement or changing their policy. I'm talking about their production abilities being wiped off the map. That's my point.
I think our production facilities have as much likelihood of being wiped off the map as Canada's production facilities, because both mean World War III. But that being said, you're a free trader.
Mm-hmm.
This is against the Republican brand. We can give other examples. You're clearly harsher on Putin, and your party used to be. I mean, Republicans used to complain that we Democrats were too soft on Russia. I don't think I'm crazy. I remember people, you pinko communists. That was the slang.
Remember the scene with President Obama talking with Medvedev and saying,
right, and Republicans.
Please tell Vladimir that I'll be much more easy and flexible with him after my election.
Went crazy about that.
Of course
that.
We did.
But
it was
now,
good.
According to a recent poll, just in 2016, only 20% of Republicans felt favorably towards Russia. It's now 40%. 40% of your party feels favorably toward Vladimir Putin. Does that statistic surprise you? I got the poll right here. It's doubled from 20 to 40.
All right. So these 40% need to be sent to re-education camps.
Okay. Well, Mike, but that's part of my question. As a Republican, how do you deal with... We've got the trade, we've got Russia, we've got the corporate welfare, the $12 billion in farm subsidies... that you know Trump wants to pay because to counteract his other policy, which is the tariffs. You don't support farm subsidies.
Now, look, again, it's a tactic. If the farm subsidies are there for 6 months while we win the trade threat and renegotiate the deal, it's a pill I'm willing to swallow to make the patient better.
And if we don't win so much that we're tired of winning.
But if we're 2 years into this and we still have subsidies and we still have tariffs and we're not getting anywhere, then it is nothing short of a disaster.
Okay. Do you think that Republican voters are torn, or do you think the answer is they just say whatever Trump says?
There are some Trump bots, without a doubt.
I like that Trump bot. I may use that.
Okay, there are some Trump bots, but you know, most people think for themselves, and I think most people understand that it's a tactic. I think that unfortunately the Europeans and the Canadians understand it's a tactic as well, and so therefore
they're not going to budge an inch.
Mexico's already budging. You know, I mean,
what's Mexico doing?
They
ain't paying for that wall.
Well, who cares if they pay for the wall? You know, it's our wall. We should pay for it. But you know, it seems to me, Mark, we're going to come out of this better. The question is, are we going to come out enough better? Are things going to improve dramatically enough to justify the short-term dislocations that we're obviously going to go through? And I don't think we have the answer to that yet.
See, but you're treating it like it's a coherent strategy. And part of the problem
is... Well, I believe it is. I think it is.
Part of the problem is we have a president who, I think he tweeted 45 tweets out... his first day on his vacation in New Jersey. He's very upset about Robert Mueller. He, you know, we have his campaign manager. I think he's going to jail. His deputy campaign manager admitting all these crimes, talking about...
Yeah, they'll go to jail until the day after the election.
And then Trump will pardon them.
Mm-hmm.
It's day after which election? The midterms or the...
No, 2020.
After he wins re-election.
Right.
You know what? I appreciate your cynicism. I think it's very honest. I think we Democrats know that.
I would do it
well.
If I was the president. You know, these guys, I'm not saying they didn't do anything wrong. It's very clear from the testimony that there's, you know, very likely possibility that they did some very serious things wrong. But none of this wouldn't have come out except for a phonied up investigation for a collusion that never happened.
Whoa.
And so if they were, you know, my peeps the day after the election,
phonied up collusion. We've got not just Paul Manafort and Robert Gates. We've got Don Jr.
But that's got nothing to
We've
do with it.
We've got Jared Kushner. We've got Michael
Nothing
Cohen.
To do with it. Where?
Collusion?
Where?
They met. Even Steve Bannon called this a traitorous act. They met with Russian agents, even prepared for the meeting, we now know, 2 days before, in Trump Tower.
Right.
Anyone who doesn't think Donald Trump knew about the meeting... Do you think Donald Trump did not know about the meeting?
I don't care if he knew about the meeting.
You don't care if he knew
if
about the
I
meeting.
Was the guy that got that email, I would have taken the meeting and I would have sat down and
from
said, "What do you guys
agent.
Got?" From
Maybe you need to look at 18 U.S.C. 371, Mike, because you take anything of value in a campaign.
I don't know if they have anything of value. That's why I'm taking the meeting to find out what's going on. What do they got? And if it's something that needs to be reported, then I report it. But I would have taken the meeting. I see nothing wrong with sitting down and saying, what do you guys got?
The FBI first or last or after the meeting?
There's nothing happened in the meeting, so therefore there's no need to call them. I mean, they were
snookered. First of all, I don't know that nothing happened in the meeting. We do know that Donald Trump, 2 days before the meeting, happily declared, we're going to get some real good dirt on Hillary Clinton. And folks, I'm going to have this whole expose about Hillary Clinton. He said 2 days before the meeting, which interestingly enough was the same day as the pre-meeting.
Okay.
He says we're going to do this, and lo and behold, he doesn't say a word after that meeting where maybe nothing occurred.
Right.
We also know that he publicly asked the Russians to help him out.
That was a joke. Come on, Mark.
We also know from the indictments that they're going to prove, I think, that the Russian activity stepped up that very day to do espionage against the United States to hack in. I don't understand this. Do you think Richard Nixon, there was enough to impeach him in Watergate? I mean, they broke in to steal dirt on the political opponent. No foreign agents there. There's no evidence to this day that Richard Nixon knew about the break-in. All he did was cover it up.
Yeah, see, I don't think, the break-in was not impeachable offense.
No,
it
but
was,
the cover-up.
It was the cover-up and the obstruction of justice that was the impeachable offense.
Right. Don't you think that Donald Trump has tried to cover up what happened and
but there's
to obstruct
no crime.
Justice?
No, I don't think so because there's no crime. How can you obstruct justice when there's no crime?
It's called espionage. Stealing from the hacking is as much a crime when the Russians do it as when G. Gordon Liddy does it.
Okay, but they all right. So what crime are we talking about? Again, I thought we were still focused on the meeting at Trump Tower with Don Jr. and Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner.
Well, that would be a conspiracy conspiracy.
But it was a nothing burger. They came in there and they wanted to talk about the Magnitsky Act.
They came in there on the pretext.
Of saying we got good dirt, and then they had no good dirt.
Do you think that Don Jr. or had any reason to believe that the Russians legally got that dirt? The Russians were doing Google searches, and they just happened to find out that Hillary had problems with Whitewater.
He had idea what they found. He was promised good dirt. He didn't have any specifics.
Right. From a country that has a long history of espionage and murder.
If they had reportable information, yes, you call the FBI that afternoon, within 1 minute after the meeting's over. But it turned out all they wanted to do was talk about adoption.
I think you call them the day that the meeting is suggested.
And I want to find out what they got.
Steve Bannon thinks that, and he said this is actually
traitorous. Steve Bannon not high on my favorites list, but that's okay.
Well, he probably was before he was
The two people that I'm so glad are gone,
Steve Bannon
and that Hungarian guy, Borka.
Borka. Borka. He's scary.
Borka.
He's scary stuff.
Those are the two guys who were much better off.
I'll tell you who I miss.
Gone.
I miss the Mooch. I kind of like the Mooch. I enjoyed Scaramucci. We're going to take a break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a few minutes left, and we got a bunch of callers from Mike Lane. Let's start at Tom, line 4, Columbus, Ohio. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, guys. I think the biggest issue in history is immigration. For example, a Harvard-Harris poll the other day showed that immigration is now the biggest issue. I mean, you're talking about Trump, and the biggest issue is just immigration.
Tom, do you agree with the separation of families? Do you think that was a good idea?
Yeah, to keep our country from turning, being swamped by the third world.
Swamped by what? the third world? Wait. This is interesting. You said swamped by the third world. You're okay with Norwegian immigrants, but not Mexican immigrants?
Yeah, not all races are the same. You guys.
Not all races are the same. You know what? I think you just answered my question, Tom. Thank you for your call. Mike, can we assume Tom is a racist?
Let me say, I'll underscore what he says. Not all races are the same, but they all have the same ability and the same thing. The reason they're different races is because they are different, but that doesn't make their abilities or their contributions or their desirability different.
I think race is a construct. It's one that exists because of historical reasons, but has no real factor. But that's what we think of when we think of Trumpists. We think of people like Tom. All right, Tamara, Joplin, Missouri, line 5. Oh, I got off Tom to get to Tamara.
That's call back, Tamara.
All right, call back, Tamara. We got a few minutes left. When I think of a Trumpist, not a Republican, because I do think of, I still think of Trumpists and Republicans as different. I consider you, Mike Lane, a Republican. Oh, Tamara's back. All right, so Tamara, line 5. Go ahead.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I had a couple points.
Okay, real quick.
He was doing a really good job till you brought up the Trump Tower meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The day after that meeting, Donald Trump stood in front of 10,000 people and said, "We got dirt on Hillary Clinton coming."
Yes, he did.
And then he sat on Air Force One and wrote that letter for Don Jr.
He dictated Don Jr. and lied about it.
Adoption.
That's right.
And lied about it. So, you know what? I don't understand what you don't understand, that it is illegal for an American politician to conspire with a foreign country to overthrow a candidate in this country. And it comes with a 15-year prison sentence.
So hang on, Tamara.
What don't you understand about
18 U.S.C. Section 371 says it is illegal to get anything of value from a foreign government to help in a campaign. It's a criminal statute.
Right.
You don't dispute that.
I haven't read the statute, but I'm going to defer to the lawyer in the room.
Take it my word for it. So therefore, why isn't this meeting a problem?
Okay, number one, because they didn't get anything of value. Number two,
they tried to get some. Intent is what matters in the law. Attempted murder is a crime, even if you don't succeed in your murder.
All right, number two, it was, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was not real clear that this woman was acting on behalf of the Russian government at the time she was coming here seeking this meeting. And number three, I would reverse the tables and say, Tamara, was it a crime for Hillary Clinton to hire Christopher Steele and instruct him to go over to Russia and get information on Trump?
First of all,
Hillary Clinton did not hire Christopher.
That's true.
Steele.
Yes, she did.
No, she didn't.
So
no,
yes,
what happened was Steele did the memo.
The Republican Party was done with that.
That's right. He shopped it to friends like yours who opposed. We only got a couple of minutes left. Let me just explain the situation. But I appreciate your point. The Steele memo was shopped first to Republicans for many, many months who opposed Trump. They hired him and paid for it and reported it. Then he shopped it to the DNC for about a month. Not Hillary, but the DMC. They paid for it for a month. It was all reported. That's a very different. You can purchase things. You can purchase foreign wine and serve it at a campaign event. It's perfectly fine to purchase things of value. What's not fine is to donate things of value, to donate,
okay,
to give
well,
a campaign contribution. And that's a very important distinction between
Nothing was donated to the Trump campaign. And Hillary Clinton, if there's collusion, it was laundered. She paid Fusion GPS. She paid Perkins Coie.
First of all, she didn't pay.
Who paid
the
DNC. Fusion GPS, who paid Christopher Steele, who paid the Russians.
And it was all reported.
For the crap.
It was all reported.
But nonetheless, she was the one who was financing this whole thing.
First of all, again, Republicans did it for many, many months before they ever brought it to the DNC.
Some guy named Mercer did it for a couple months. And nobody,
not some guy. He's a very powerful Republican. But that's okay.
Whatever.
That's okay. The point is this. You agree the Mueller investigation has to continue until he figures out what happened. I mean, 82 people.
He's figured out what's happened.
82
he knows
people.
Nothing's happened, and he's trying to justify
82
his.
82 people in the Trump orbit have been connected with the Russians. He's got, I forget how many indictments, there dozens, including several guilty pleas, and Michael Cohen's about to flip. You don't think he's found enough? Because it's a lot more than was ever found against Bill Clinton.
No, I don't think anything's been found. And, you know, the best you got is Carter Page. And as has been said about him, you know, if this guy ain't a Keystone cop, I don't know what he is.
I think at the end of the day, there's enough to go right to the President of the United States. But that's the end of our time. Mike Lane, thanks for coming here on the
Inside Scoop. I'll take the bet.